Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Wednesday, September 3rd, welcome, 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 friends, to the show. I'm Cherry Gregg.
Three welcomes for the third day of September. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arrett. Great to have you here.
Yes. So crime is fast becoming a central issue in American politics. This despite the fact that federal data indicates that crime is actually on the decline nationwide. Why, you ask? Well, because President Donald Trump has deployed National Guard troops to Los Angeles and most recently to the District of Columbia, alleging rampant crime and a public safety emergency. And the president has openly floated plans to deploy troops to more cities, citing Chicago and Baltimore by name. Philadelphia has not been specifically mentioned, but our local leaders, including Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro, say they are prepared if the White House turns its attention here. Trump and his supporters, they all say crime is a problem in the major cities in this country. Democrats argue Trump's interference is a political ploy, a power grab, and is not needed. So today we have two guests with very different viewpoints and perspectives. They'll give us insights on the messaging behind this issue of crime in politics, as well as the law justifying Trump's use of federal forces. And we want to hear from you. Should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? Why or why not? And give us your thoughts while you're at it on this messaging and this political fight about crime. The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, be sure to share this with a friend, but also leave those comments coming in the chat. And I know you've probably seen this. National news shows you can't go through 15 minutes without seeing crime pop up as a topic.
Always there. Always there. So give us a call. We know it's on your mind. 888-477-9499. The email again is studio2@whyy.org. First, however, a trio of local news stories. Let's get to the trio, Cherry. So it is just over a year until the 2026 midterm elections. And the big races in our region are starting to take shape. Just this morning, Pennsylvania State Rep Morgan Cephas joined the race to replace Philadelphia Congressman Dwight Evans, who is retiring. She joins State Rep Chris Rapp, State Senator Sharif Street, and others in a crowded Democratic primary for that seat. Up in Northeast Pennsylvania, they call it NEPA, Cherry. We learned yesterday that Scranton Mayor Paige Cognetti will challenge freshman Congressman Rob Bresnahan, who himself just dislodged a longtime Democratic incumbent in 2024. And then in the Lehigh Valley recently, Dems are starting to line up to knock off another new Republican rep, Ryan McKenzie. And we learned that Bethlehem fireman Bob Brooks is running. He's got some major support in that race, including Josh Shapiro and Bernie Sanders. So like I said, the big races, we're starting to see the outline of how they're going to look come primary season, then eventually November.
So interesting, because you see the next generation of leaders in the Democratic Party sort of lining up to do their battle for power. And they've been challenging, in some cases, career politicians or taking seats from people who've been in power for a long time. If you think about Congressman Dwight Evans, I mean, he's been in politics for more than three decades and he served in various capacities. And now you see the generation of leaders. You have, you know, Sharif Street, Morgan Cephas, all of those and others going to be battling out to see who comes out on top. Same thing in the Northeast with Bresnahan, a Republican that took out a longtime incumbent, Matt Cartwright. And you see Cognetti, a Gen X millennial.
Yeah.
Trying to stake her claim. So this is interesting. I think it's something we'll see across Pennsylvania and probably across the country.
Certainly some fresh faces and some folks you're going to get to know very well, thanks to ads and attack ads over the next
That's going to start happening.
Yep. It's coming, folks. It's coming.
Get ready.
Speaking of attacks.
Oh, good transition, Avi Wolfman-Arrett. The Pennsylvania Attorney General's office is one of the latest victims of a ransomware attack that has forced state and federal courts to pause hundreds of cases that they are dealing with. And if you didn't know what a ransomware attack is, it occurs when hackers infect a computer network with encrypted software and they basically take over that network and demand that the network owner pay a ransom, AKA money, to regain access. And a lot of times you don't even have access to your email. It's crazy. So the Attorney General's office computers, they've been down since August 11th. But the office issued a statement. They said they have not paid any ransom and they are working diligently to regain access to their own computer network. But this attack meant that they couldn't access case files. They couldn't contact witnesses. They couldn't respond to court filings. It basically shut them down in a lot of ways. As of Friday, employees had access to their email finally. But this stuck out in my mind because this has been happening all over the country, where these you know, hackers have been targeting government entities. I remember a few years ago, Baltimore, their agent, City of Baltimore, was on the was a subject of an attack. They wiped out all the traffic tickets, right? You saw that Chicago, their Department of Aviation was targeted. Florida, multiple cities targeted. And it can be a real disruption. And by the way, these cyberware pirates, they want a lot of money. And it's still, and even if you don't pay them, it costs you a lot of money to get access to your networks.
Yeah, the crime wave of the future, no doubt about it. Yeah. I was blown away when I read in the Inquirer that I think 200 civil cases here in Philadelphia were paused.
Yes.
Are paused.
Yeah.
I mean, that's an incredible disruption.
People
to the
not
daily
getting
work
justice.
Of the
I know. I know.
Final story. And this is such an interesting one. And I was surprised that I did not even know this until yesterday. Did you know that Villanova University owns the original copy of Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech?
Yeah, did not know that.
It's true. And it's all thanks to a bold request back in 1963. So George Raveling was a former Villanova basketball player about to embark on a long decorated career as a coach. He just happened to be working security for King on the day of that famous speech. And afterward, he just decided to ask King for the paper.
Yeah.
And King said, sure.
Gave it to him.
Just gave it to him. Raveling kept it for many, many years. I believe he rebuffed some requests to sell it for millions of dollars. And eventually in 2021, he donated that copy to Villanova, his alma mater. They have it right now, and they loan it out to various entities. And we're mentioning all of this because George Raveling died yesterday at the age of 88, a remarkable American life. Unrelated to all of this, Jerry, Raveling was, like I said, a very prominent basketball coach and just sort of mover and shaker in the basketball world. He is arguably the key figure who convinced Michael Jordan to sign with Nike, arguably the most important partnership in the history of sports marketing. So George Raveling, at these two pivot points of history, the I Have a Dream speech and then Michael Jordan signing with Nike, completely unrelated to one another, but it's so fascinating that he connects the two.
Yeah, I will say I love this story because George Raveling was born in a segregated hospital in D.C., went on to become the first black coach in the ACC, first black coach in the Pac-12. I mean, coached in the Olympics, by the way. Clearly, he had a knack for making history, but also knowing when history was being made.
Exactly. Well put.
And
well put.
That was really dope to me. Also, can I just point out this little fact that I'm not surprised that the I Have a Dream speech landed back in the Philadelphia area, because as you probably know, the woman who inspired the speech, Prathia Hall, is from Philadelphia, and it was her 1962 prayer that rhythmically said, I have a dream, that inspired Dr. King to write those words. So it's almost like the universe conspired to get it back to the area of the person who actually made the, it's like this
That's
little
a great
string.
Point. That's a great point. That's so fascinating. By the way, of course, King went to Crozier.
Yes, so many connections.
Seminary school. So lots of connections between King and that speech and the area. And it's just a cool fact that it ended up in Villanova, all thanks to George Raveling and his one bold request in 1963. So never be afraid to ask, folks. Never be afraid to ask.
That was a bold, and he was working security. Go ahead. And rest in peace, George Raveling.
Yeah.
A life well lived.
Yeah. Absolutely. So turning to our main topic today, we're going to ask you and our guests, should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. Don't go anywhere. Studio 2 will be right back.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. We're going in. With those three words at a Tuesday press conference, President Trump made it clear he wants federal troops patrolling the streets of Chicago.
Said troops are already in Washington, D.C. The same goes for Los Angeles, where just yesterday a federal judge ruled their deployment was illegal. In these tense moments, the question lingers. How far will the president go in deploying federal troops?
And will the courts stop him? We'll discuss those questions today while also examining the political ramifications of Trump's attempted crime crackdown. Joining us in studio, we have Wally Zimmelong, a Republican trial lawyer at Zimmelong LLC. Wally, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much for having me on.
We also have in studio Adam Erickson, founder and principal of Princeton Strategies. Adam, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yes, and for our listeners at home, on the road, and elsewhere, our question of the day is this. Should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? Tell us why or why not. And the number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, be sure to share this video with a friend and drop your comment in the chat.
Let's bring in a caller to start it off. Let's see what Brian from Morristown has to say. Hey, Brian. You're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
My comment is that this whole thing about the federal troops has nothing to do with crime, actually. It's all about attention and Trump trying to appease his base, because crime statistically is down throughout the country. I would trust state and local officials over this administration with any numbers at this point. And it's all about him exaggerating a situation, sending in the federal troops, waiting some time, and then say, okay, crime, everything's better. See, I came in, made everything better. This is what I'm doing. When I'm pretty sure at the end of the day, statistics will stay the same. And it's all a matter of him garnering attention to appease his base.
Thanks, Brian.
Most of which do not live in cities.
Thanks so much, Brian. This is Brian from Morristown. Wally, I want to ask you, as we start this conversation, what is the possible legal justification for deploying federal troops in a city like Chicago? Let's put aside the example of D.C. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it sort of stands alone in terms of how it's governed. But what would be the argument to go to a place like Chicago?
Yeah, I think it's important to differentiate whether it is good policy to deploy the National Guard or federal troops to a city like Chicago from whether it's legal to deploy the National Guard or federal troops to a city like Chicago. Certainly, there is authority in the United States Code to deploy troops to the city of Chicago. In one instance, there's authority for the president to deploy federal troops or the National Guard to protect certain federal interests or to assist in federal law enforcement, the enforcement of federal laws. I think it's 10 United States Code 12406. That's the section of the United States Code that President Trump relied upon to deploy troops to Los Angeles. More broadly speaking, under the so-called Insurrection Act, the president has the authority to deploy the National Guard and federal troops where essentially, state authorities cannot maintain domestic order or maintain equal protection of the law. So if state authorities cannot maintain the laws of the United States or the laws of that state, there is authority in federal statute for President Trump to take the actions that he's taking. Now, whether that's good policy is a different story, but there is certainly statutory support for President Trump's proposal to send troops to a city like Chicago.
And Wally, does the law require that he prove that this is the moment? Because I it begs the question, like, why now, when you see that crime numbers are actually going down and that, you know, in Chicago they're seeing better statistics than they have in years?
Well, let's talk about the statistics first. Statistics can say whatever they want about going down, but statistics also show that in the city of Chicago this past weekend, there were something like 54 shootings and 7 murders, which I think we all agree is completely unacceptable. And we all agree that that being repeated on a weekend-by-weekend basis is completely unacceptable. And regardless of the cause of that, I think it has to be admitted that state and local authorities cannot stop that from happening. And therefore, there's justification for the president to come in with federal support. It's interesting what
you were saying, that justification exists anywhere where there's a high crime rate, any jurisdiction.
Well, I think the statute can be interpreted that way. It doesn't say expressly that wherever there's a high crime rate.
Like, what is the test here? Because there has to be some sort of test. Because
question.
You can always say, well, a murder happened, a stabbing happened, local authorities didn't stop it, ergo, we're going to send in. But obviously, the courts have to have a test.
I think so. I think that's one of the issues here, is these statutes have not been utilized in such a broad way previously by presidents. They've been utilized by presidents previously, but maybe not as liberally as President Trump is doing that, and as expansively as President Trump wants to do that. So certainly the courts will in some ways get to weigh in whether or not it's appropriate for courts to weigh in when there's area of discretionary authority whereby the president can exercise his discretion to deploy troops. In this case, that's what the statute says. He's the commander in chief. He's the chief executive of the United States of America. Congress has said he has the discretion to do this. Can an Article III court get in and second guess the president's discretion? I think ultimately that's going to be the question that the courts are going to decide. And I think ultimately, you know, not only in this area, but in other areas where there's a question of whether President Trump has the discretion as the chief executive under Article 2 to do something, he's going to be successful.
And so I want to sort of like talk about what the National Guard and federal troops are typically used for and why this feels so different, especially since there are laws that say that federal troops are not supposed to interfere with policing civilians. And so talk about the normal use, or the typical use, I should say, of National Guard versus the way the president wants to use the National Guard this time.
Sure, Terry. You mentioned something about utilizing the National Guard or the armed forces to engage in civilian policing. There is a statute, it's called the Posse Comitatus Act, that's been around since the late 19th century. I think it was passed in 1870. What's interesting is, though, if you actually look at the text of Posse Comitatus, what it says is two things that I think are very important. First, it says the armed forces are not to be used for civilian policing except as provided by federal statute or the United States Constitution. And as I mentioned, there are two areas of federal law that permit the deployment of federal troops in certain circumstances. So there are exceptions to Posse Comitatus. The other question is whether Posse Comitatus is even constitutional, because what it says is it's not a prohibition on the president deploying mm-hmm. federal troops. It says whoever does it is subject to fine and imprisonment. Well, you can't fine and imprison the president for violating a federal law. You can impeach the president, as we've seen previously, if Congress feels that a federal law has been violated, but they can't fine her.
But talk about the difference between the way National Guard is typically used versus the president's proposed use in this case.
Well, I don't think there's I think there's historical support for the National Guard obviously being deployed where there's a need to restore law and order. I mean, you look at the LA riots, you look at the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina and other instances. So one of the core duties and obligations of the National Guard has always been to at least augment local civilian authorities in maintaining law and order in areas where law and order has broken down. Natural disasters, helping with natural disasters, things like that. And then, look, at the end of the day, the National Guard is also part of the Army. So there's also a national security component of it. The National Guard can be federalized and deployed abroad. So I think, you know, there's a rather expansive duties of the National Guard. To say that the National Guard historically has not been utilized to maintain law and order or provide, you mm-hmm. know, civilian law enforcement, at least augmentation of civilian law enforcement authorities, I think is probably not accurate. But again, I think we all agree that President Trump is taking a very expansive, very aggressive, perhaps unprecedented view.
And usually
on the use
it's
of it.
With the, you know, consent of local authorities.
Well, and what I'm hearing in your question, too, mm-hmm. is, you know, is every individual in uniform with a firearm, you know, created equal? Do they all do the same things? Do we, when we're on a slump for the Phillies, bring up Jalen Hurts to pinch hit? They're very different teams. They might be athletes, but we're talking about apples and oranges.
Adam Erickson, let's bring you into the conversation now. We have seen Democratic leaders respond very differently to this use of federal authority by the president. In D.C., the mayor, who is understandably in a quite different position, has been, you know, rather acquiescent, I would say. Meanwhile, in Chicago, the mayor there and the governor of the state of Illinois have struck a very different tone. Of course, nothing's happened in Chicago quite yet. Help us parse through the various responses by Democrats and what you make of them politically.
Well, I think Maryland's governor Westmore, did a as someone that has served, as someone that has, you know, overseen what, you know, a local, you know, law enforcement versus a national military looks like, does the best job explaining what those differences are and the necessity to for us to fund local police enforcement, and how this, you know, kind of what has become kind of a stunt does very little to actually support what needs to get done on the ground.
What do you think Democrats should be saying in this moment?
I think we should be talking about anything but this. I think this is a big distraction. And that's why, I mean, we're on this show. We're going to spend an hour talking about something that's not the economy, which is we're getting record low numbers. We're not talking about, you know, job loss. We're not talking about how some of the implements with the tariffs have hurt production here in the United States. You know, we have a president that has put the highest tax on consumers here in the United States ever in history. But we're talking about this.
Yeah, but I guess it's difficult not to talk about, because it is, I think we all agree, if not unprecedented, close to unprecededented, and it sets up who knows what in the future. So I guess it is hard for me to imagine, Adam, Democrats simply ignoring this and successfully ignoring it.
And I think our caller, Brian, made a great point in the fact that we've, you know, we're taking something that is at decades low as far as our violent crime rate. We're then taking something, an instrument that's not utilized and is not going to help that matter, and then taking credit for those results that are already taking place. These statistics that we're talking about is, you know, 2024, the beginning of 2025. It is topical. It is in your face when you have armed guards with AKs, you know, at your street corner, but it's not effective and it's not changing what we need to focus on.
By the way, the question of the day for you, our listeners at home on the road and elsewhere, is this: should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? Our number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, share the video, but also leave your comments in the chat. Lobster on YouTube says there should be no federal troops taking the police's job. This is a power grab and a distraction from the from his health and the files. And of course, I'm thinking Lobster is talking about the Epstein files. I want to bring in another caller. We have Chris from Center City on the line. Chris, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes, I would like to say that talking about various federal statutes, this or that from 1870 or whatever year, that's really legitimizing Trump's actions as if they deserve that kind of legal good faith. And I think Trump is fundamentally operating in bad faith. And so giving him the benefit of that legal analysis is not warranted. And I also don't think that it's a distraction that federal troops are in our cities with AK-47s. If you're not talking about this authoritarian power grab, then you've just lost the message.
Thank you so much. That's Chris from Center City. I want to read a couple more comments, and I have a question for you, Adam. Ross from South Philadelphia says, deploying the military is a performative and expensive endeavor. For every day of this deployment, we can probably hire 10 new police officers and or enhance the police. And so my question is this, because, Adam, I wonder why Democrats are not seizing on some of the messaging around this, because the Washington Post and a lot of D.C. local news outlets have reported that the troops have been seen picking up trash, doing landscaping duties, and that this is costing American taxpayers $500,000 to $1 million a day. Why isn't this something that you hear Democrats hammering every single day?
Well, because that's not news. Donald Trump using money inefficiently is not news. This is a businessman that's gone bankrupt how many times? That's getting lost in a lot of just the air, right? Donald Trump doing something illegal is not news, but that unfortunately is something we need to talk about. And as far as Democratic, you know, messaging, we need to go back to the economy. That's what we do best. That's when we have a Democratic administration is when we can start actually building jobs, when we have job growth, and when people can actually get paid a fair wage.
Wally, I think there is a kind of presupposition here that Republicans are generally going to be in favor of this, that they'll be in lockstep with Donald Trump. Yet historically, Republicans have raised alarms about the expansions of federal power. And it's not like Trump hasn't marched down this road before in other ways, but this is such an obvious, visceral, visual expansion of federal power into an area that's always been the domain of states and localities. I am curious, like, is this not at all dangerous with the president, even with his base?
So I'd like to go back to something Adam said, which is remarkable, but perhaps not unsurprising, is that Democrats want to run away from the crime issue. I think it's fascinating that they want to talk about anything but crime. And what one of the callers, I think the first caller, Brian, said was, well, this is just President Trump trying to focus attention on a certain thing. And I think there is a kernel of truth to that. Look, we're here today talking about crime in major cities. And we all agree and we all nodded when I said there is a problem. There's a problem with murders. There's a problem with gun violence. And we have to do something about that. And there used to be a time in this country where stopping crime and lowering crime rates and doing everything we can to solve crime was a decidedly bipartisan issue. I mean, one of President Clinton's landmark achievements was the crime bill, the omnibus crime bill, where he put 100,000 additional police officers on the street. So I think if the Democrats were talking about, well, we want to put more police officers on the street and we don't need the National Guard, I think the Democrats would be well served to do that. But they're not doing that. They're complaining about Donald Trump. They're complaining about everything else. They're clutching their pearls and they're saying, we want to talk about anything but crime. Now, to address directly the question about, you know, executive authority, I do think that, you know, there's something to be perceived here for those that express consternation with President Trump's exercise of Article II power, is that one day, and I remind my Republican friends all the time of this, one day, hopefully not too soon for my side, but there will be a Democrat that is president. And Donald Trump is setting legal precedent about the authority of a president to act as the executive. And one day a Democrat will be able to use what President Trump has done.
What do your Republican friends say when you warn them about this? Because this was the party of federalism for as long. It was the Federalist Society.
Put the power back in the states. Yeah. Put the power back in the cities.
I'm just curious, like, does it ring? What's the look back that you get?
Well, I think there's some acknowledgement of it. I mean, I do think that, you talk about the party of federalism, the party of states. At least in my legal circles, there's always been a wide-held acceptance of the unitary executive and that that there is a strong Article II power that the executive branch wields and the president wields. So I don't know that was ever a fringe ideology within the Republican Party or within conservative legal circles. But, you know, I think there is an acknowledgement that one day that
I think
the
rhetorically,
pendulum
though, Republicans, you know, historically have really, I understand the unitary theory thing, but that's in legal circles. I'm talking about the base. I'm talking about voters. I'm talking about what motivates the voters. You don't think there's been some part of the message has really been that, you know, local governments should have control over most
things. I want to piggyback on what Avi is saying, because on one hand, you know, powers over whether or not people should have a right to abortion belongs to the states. But then dealing with local crime issues belongs to the federal government. That doesn't seem to marry up in my mind. How do you justify that?
Well, what I think it is that we are talking about most people see and feel the issue of crime. And when they see President Trump coming out saying, I want to do something about crime, I am willing to come in with federal authorities to assist local authorities in combating crime. Most people, when they don't get into the issues of the unitary executive, when they don't get into issues of federalism, say, that sounds like a great idea. And when they hear Democrats with no response other than these sort of legal theories, or it's a federal overreach, or it's a state's issue, or we don't want to talk about it, and the data suggests, I think that's a from a, like I said, when I started my comments, there's a difference between whether it's good policy and whether it's legal. From a policy perspective, I think it's a winning political argument. I think President Trump is winning this argument politically decisively. So, because most people see him as a decisive leader to that is trying to make an effort to combat local issues of crime, where many people in these municipalities and in these local jurisdictions do not feel local leaders are doing enough.
Well, do you agree with that, Adam, that he's winning this issue politically? And also, just could you respond to Wally's comments about, you know, what Democrat leaders could do to, I guess, burnish their credentials on public safety?
Sure. Well, and I'm happy to. I mean, I think Wally and I both agree. This is a issue should be talked about and a winning issue. And Democrats are winning on this issue. We just in Philadelphia elected a mayor that responded to the riots with a, you know, proposed as a councilwoman a larger budget for our law enforcement. We have cities, we have the city council, you know, putting together and voting and passing in a Democratic majority, record spending for our local, police officers. And we're seeing that across the nation. And these are Democratic cities that we are seeing seeing record lows.
Is it resonating, though, do you think, with voters, the Democratic response on crime? I mean, so I think it's fair to point to Parker, right? And she's different than some Democrats on this. But
she's not progressive. She's more of a centrist Democrat, by the way.
So there's two stats that there's so something got brought up right in the very beginning as far as the statistics on I think it was presented as just crime, but it's actually violent crime has gone down. Mm-hmm. Two other statistics that kind of jump to mind as far as with your questions are as far as how people perceive. And if you ask, and it's I think at 60% of people perceive that crime has gone up, even if the numbers show differently, even if what you're seeing in the streets, and if
is a forever problem, I think, for whoever's running big cities, Democrat. I mean, it used to be the Republicans in Philadelphia,
and
many
it's hard
years
to
ago.
Respond when there is even one murder to say that crime statistics are down. So
yeah, and then the third statistic that is a direct correlation to what we're seeing with this administration is that petty thefts are actually on the rise. As far as individuals that aren't able to make it right now or are working two jobs and can't afford to live. Or also people just don't think there's opportunity. You know, it's both a deterrent and then also just kind of getting by.
Yeah. Let me bring in another caller. We have Stephanie from Doylestown on the line. Stephanie, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Yes. Hi. Thanks so much. I heard earlier and I've heard it before that this weekend and the numbers of, shootings and crime that happened. In isolation, those numbers can sound horrific. Again, one shooting is too many. But in the overall, what are the numbers, let's say, compared to last year for a Labor Day weekend? Or some of the other states that have claimed to have crime go down? I think that, it seemed to be dismissed, the crime numbers going down. And so what's announced is what happened this weekend. Yes, it's a lot, but what is it compared to years prior? In addition, I thought the mayor of Chicago did a great job and asked a good question. How about we spend some money? How about Trump spend some money on stopping the guns that are coming into Chicago from, and I won't mention the states, it was already said in the briefing that they did on TV. Thanks.
Thank you. That's Stephanie from Doylestown. David, Don't Touch My Hair on YouTube says, why not put in place policies that actually prevent crime in the long run, ensuring all kids receive quality education with options for good paying jobs after school, increasing wages, etc. And so, Wally, you talked about the policy issues and we're about to come up on a break. But, I just wonder, why not work with local authorities? Why not make this if everybody wants crime to be better, why take this more power grab type of approach? We'll talk about that. We'll also talk about the messaging on the other side. We'd love to hear from you, our listeners at home and elsewhere. Should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? Email us studio2@whyy.org. We have a few callers on the line. We'll get them when we come back after the break.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2 on WHYY. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about how Republicans and Democrats handle crime in big cities and how the president is attempting to use his executive power and deploy the National Guard to cities like Baltimore or Chicago. And we still want to hear from you. The question of the day is, should federal authorities intervene in local crime problems? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on Facebook and YouTube, share the video and keep those comments coming in the live chat.
Our guests this hour are Adam Erickson, founder and principal of Princeton Strategies, and Wally Zimmelong, Republican trial lawyer at Zimmelong LLC.
Let's bring in another caller since we have quite a few. Sheila from New Jersey's on the line. Sheila, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, all. Thanks for taking my call. My question is whether or not I believe Trump is actually doing this because he supports helping local police with crime in their cities. The reason I have a problem is if that is his stance, what happened on January 6th? I mean, we saw police officers get killed. We saw people get hurt. We saw an insurrection. So I just don't know how any of the Republican leaders in Washington can say any of this with a straight face. I'm having a hard time.
Yeah, that's, and Gene in Havertown had a similar question. And I think that goes to Cherry's question before the break, right? You were asking about sort of why not cooperate with local authorities. Some people just feel like this is, feels disingenuous from Trump. And I guess, Wally, if you could respond to those points.
Well, I think that to go back to Cherry's question before the break is that even the administration would agree that a long-term from a long-term solution basis, deploying the National Guard to cities to assist in lowering the crime rate is not a long-term solution. And that the best solution is to empower local law enforcement to do their jobs. I mean, we look at Mayor Parker. I think Mayor Parker gets it. When we let the men and women in local police departments do their jobs, crime goes down. But what's happened in these Democrat, progressive Democrat-run cities is that we've handcuffed the police. We've prosecuted the police. We have an anti-police prosecutor. We have a revolving door of justice in a place like the city of Philadelphia, where there's cashless bail, where somebody gets picked up for a crime, the police do their job, and that person's right back on the street. And it takes, you know, dozens and dozens of instances before these folks are held. And I think when we empower local police and we let them do their job, crime goes down. I think ultimately that's the long-term solution here. But the reason why we have these out-of-control crime rates in these progressive Democrat-run locations is because, like I said, police have not been able to do their job. We should be advocating for more police on the street. We should be advocating for less restrictions on what these police can do. Very simple techniques that have come under attack repeatedly over the last several years. Stop and frisk. Something that Mayor Nutter wholeheartedly embraced, stop and frisk, where police could pat somebody down to see if they were carrying an illegal gun. Look, the men and women in uniform know who's walking down the street carrying firearms, and they were the ones that were that were being patted down. Mayor Nutter realized that. He advocated for that. The Philadelphia Police Department utilized that, and crime rate went down. Gun violence went down until the police department was sued by progressive advocacy groups to stop that practice.
But, you know, Wally, I got to ask you. I mean, it seems like, if you just look at the optics, it seems like the Trump administration is going after black cities with black mayors that have large black populations and are in blue states specifically. And it seems like it's very political. There are cities like Nashville in red states that have crime problems, too. They are not mentioned. They aren't getting the offers for federal help. How do you reconcile that? Because it looks very race-based, it looks very political, and it doesn't look like it's actual help focused on cities that actually need help.
Well, I certainly think it's Democrat-focused because Democrat policies have caused skyrocketing crime rates in these cities to the detriment largely to black communities. I mean, black communities are impacted the most in these cities by crime, by murders. It is the
but
folks,
they haven't asked the Trump administration to come in and help them.
Well, I don't know who the spokesman for the black communities is in these cities that say they haven't asked. I've certainly seen plenty of folks in the communities. I've spoken to, to folks and leaders in the community that have, that welcome additional law enforcement, that support the police and wholeheartedly support what President Trump is doing because they look at local officials and they're not doing it. So I think when to say that it's race-based is really misguided, because what President Trump is trying to do in lowering crime rates.
Why not lower crime rates in some of the cities in red states that are also dealing with crime? Why focus on black-led, black-majority cities?
Well, I think he's focusing on that because that's where the per capita crime rate is the highest. I think that he's focusing on
that. There are a number of red cities and red states across the, you know, I mean, that are having similar issues in the top 10. And I just wonder if it's really about crime, why not try to help all of those cities?
Well, I think President Trump is trying to help all of those cities. But in those red-run cities, the police are not being handcuffed in enforcing local laws. Look, as much as we want to, we're never going to get the crime rate down to zero. We're never going to get the murder rate down to zero. But you cannot deny. We talk about data. That's what everyone keeps talking about. Data shows that the crime is worse. The impact on the black community is worse in these Democrat progressive run cities.
Yeah. And I guess suppose it's sort of what strata of like government you look at, because if you sort it by state, then the Republican states really do rise to the top.
I think
eight of the 10 10 states with the highest homicide rate, eight are run by Republicans. And I do think, Wally, that is where people sort of lose the trust with the president, where they're saying like this feels selective, it feels political. And I guess to move it back now to Adam, because we haven't heard from you for a bit, I think there is this, it's become just sort of a difficult issue for Democrats seemingly to navigate. Gavin Newsom has tried this pivot of like, let's talk about the crime rate in red states. Traditionally, like you said before, I think it's been more just like, let's not talk about it too much at all. Do you think that the Newsom approach is the way to go to say, well, what about them?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, we just, as far as within some of these communities, we just don't have the kind of time to hypothetical or talk about, you know, losing trust in a president we don't have trust in to begin with. What we're seeing in with a lot of the elected officials, and you know, as Wally mentioned, it is absolutely a winning topic to talk about, is how we can prevent crime, and not just enforce laws once those crimes have been prevented. But, you know, looking here in Philadelphia, we've got a council member, Isaiah Thomas, who is now putting together a 2-week camp. This is a camp that started out as a 1-week basketball camp that's expanded to, you know, the orchestra donated some time. They do yoga. It's for all, you know, kind of facets, without any federal funding.
Can I ask you, though, like, I think part of what you could argue that Trump is doing here is trying to shift the Overton window to make it so progressive crime strategies are no longer on the table, even for the Democratic Party, and that they embrace things like stop and frisk, which Wally brought up. Is that the direction you see Democrats going here? Is that the direction they should go, which is basically to moderate on crime in ways that, for instance, a Mayor Parker has?
Well, I'm happy to be here and kind of talk on behalf of, you know, Democratic strategists, Democratic Party and such. But the reason we don't have like an elected right here is because there's real things that are taking place. They don't have time because there are real kids that, you know, like I said, kind of going back to kind of some of these day camps that get kids off the streets, talking about some of these funding. I mean, one of the things we, you know, aren't talking about is we're talking about funding for our law enforcement. We still have a deficit of individuals signing up. We're down, I think, you know,
yeah, recruiting
15%
has been a problem
for the police.
So we've
got
the funding that everyone agrees upon that we need, but we just don't have the individuals. And when we talk about things like stop and frisk that proved to actually be horribly unproductive, when we talk about, you know, different things like, you know, pulling over, you know, young black men just for driving while black. Do you know 90%, I think it's like 92% traffic stops result in no ticket, no warning, anything like that. So we're looking at different cities adopting ways to be more useful, more utilized, and they might not be great talking points. They might not be great sound bites, but we're doing things, and we need to open up the conversation on what's actually taking place. Again, the crime numbers going down aren't by accident.
Yeah, let me
jump in real quick and share something. I invite you to come with me to any community in, and I'll take you there, any community that's hard hit by crime in the city of Philadelphia, and we'll talk to some of the community leaders, and I'll allow you to tell them that the Democrat solution for crime is a two-week basketball camp, and you'll see the reaction that you get, and you'll realize that that's not a real winning strategy.
I welcome that trip. I welcome that
trip. All right,
trip.
You guys report back. Okay.
Yeah, let me read a couple comments. We have Henry on Facebook who says, no, federal agents should not get involved unless maybe they're invited for assistance. Otherwise, it's an invasion. And by the way, we have like three callers, so I'm going to try to bring one in.
Yeah, let's get Jordan from Northeast Philly on the show. Hey, Jordan, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I was just going to say that, you know, he ran on America First. And I think this is him bringing back the conversation. You know, we all know that his approval is a little bit low right now. And, you know, recently in the news and a lot of attention internationally, all the international problems. So I think that's what this is. But, you know, he, in order for that to happen, he needs to create fear. He needs to create an issue. And this is what he's doing. He knows that his base feed off of this type of thing. And, like you said, the numbers just aren't showing it. There's places all over the country. We're talking about Baltimore, mm-hmm. Camden, that, you know, they've had success with reform. And like the mayor of Baltimore. And, you know, but that doesn't work for Trump. You know, what he needs is a problem. He needs fear in order to be the guy that can solve it, you know?
Yeah.
So that was my comment.
That's Jordan from Northeast Philly. Thanks, Jordan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess, Wally, just going back to the politics of this all for Republicans, because we are, you know, fast approaching the midterm. We talked about that at the top of the show. You know, every poll's a little different, but recent big one from Quinnipiac said 42% of voters approve of the way Trump is handling crime overall, 54% oppose. I get the sense this is a really important issue with the base. But, you know, Trump's not trying to win over the base anymore. He's trying to win over the median American voter.
Yeah, I think it's important. Crime's always been a winning issue, even with independents. Those Quinnipiac numbers that you cited are it's interesting, are reflective probably of President Trump's approval rating overall.
Overall, yeah.
As we enter the midterms.
And they tack closely, too. Yeah,
on all issues. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's probably unique to President Trump, given the polarizing nature of how he makes many people feel. Heading into the midterms, crime's going to be an important issue. I think if Republicans win on crime, I think that's a winning issue for them. Look, midterm elections, the party out of power always outperforms the party in power. I don't think there's really been, except for one over the last 60 years, where a party in power has gained seats in Congress. We have a closely divided Congress, and Republicans are right to run on issues that are winners, that are going to win with independents. And I think crime is one of those issues, Avi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they always bring up crime, by the way. You know, I wanted to read this question. Question from Peter, who says, what is the exit strategy once federal troops are sent in? For example, what number of shootings is low enough for them to leave, or will they stay until the number is zero? I want to talk about the long-term impact, Wally. I mean, there some reports say it costs up to $1 million a day to have federal troops in D.C. I mean, this is not sustainable, especially if you're talking about, you know, an administration trying to scale back the budget, and you're talking about adding more troops to different cities, spending millions and millions and millions of dollars for folks to pick up trash. How do you sort of make this, that the argument that this is the way to solve America's crime problems in big cities?
Well, like I said, when we came in after the break, I don't think this is a long-term solution. I think this is a short-term solution to bring crime rates down and to get folks to realize that when you
put... To what? As Peter asked.
Well, I don't know that we have a baseline number. Unfortunately, we're never going to get crime to zero. We're never going to get murder rates to zero. But you bring crime rates down and you improve the lives, the everyday lives of people that are living in these cities and these communities that are so hard hit by crime. I think the long-term solution is to get people to realize that more law enforcement, less restrictions on law enforcement is the long-term solution. So I would welcome a bipartisan bill that such as that President Clinton put forward in 1993 Let's put 100,000. Why stop at 100,000? Let's put 200,000 extra police on the streets. I don't think that is a controversial issue. So I think the long-term solution is more policing, more law enforcement, and more prosecutors that are willing to enforce the laws
and
that we have.
Adam, I want you to respond to that because that led to mass incarceration and so many people in prison.
I appreciate, while they kind of agreeing with what a lot of the Democratic mayors have done in their cities, we're seeing record high money being put towards towards the law enforcement, and we're seeing those numbers decrease for decades. We're talking about as far as midterms, Republicans running, and they absolutely are running, but they're not running towards something. They're running away from our economy, because our economy is what's getting them into a lot of trouble, because it's troubling us. We have 4 different states that have flipped state Senate seats, and these aren't in urban areas. These are in rural, and that's, you talk to farmers, you talk to different people trying to get by. There's a reason they're voting for Democrats, and it's because they need to make more money to survive.
Well, I want to thank you both for being here this hour. As we get to the close, Adam Erickson, founder and principal of Princeton Strategies. Adam, thanks for your time today.
Thank you.
And Wally Zimmelong, Republican trial lawyer at Zimmelong LLC. Appreciate you being here, Wally.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Let me read in maybe a comment. Victor from Philadelphia says, do you know how many liberal friends I have who are arming themselves right now? Not because they are afraid of criminals. After all, crime is down. They're afraid of the federal government. Let's remember why the Second Amendment was written.
Yeah.
Email from Christine. Trump is not helping the American people, but if they're sending troops here, perhaps we can try to utilize them. So a couple of comments to round out the show.
Yeah.
Thank you all for participating today. And let me thank the folks who put the show together. Debbie Builder, Paige Marie Bessler, and Andreas Copes are producers. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Thanks so much for listening.